You know, after lessons like this morning, those are heavy. Those are hard to give, you know, because, you know, no one likes hearing about loving our enemies. You know, we do, but it's hard, isn't it? Because every single one of us is in a different place and we deal with unique struggles and we want to allow Christ to live in us in that way. But it's just difficult to discuss those things. And so I want to thank you for being such good students this morning, and I had really good feedback just from you personally and as we discussed together the different ways that we're allowing Christ to allow us to grow in that way. Tonight's lesson, these are so much easier to give. This is story time, and this is what we're going to be doing for the next couple Sunday nights. We began last Sunday night, and we are looking at what I'm calling lesser known stories in the Old Testament. Because a lot of times we spend, much of our focus on particular characters. We focus on Abraham. We focus on Joseph. We focus on David. And many times we're very familiar with a lot of those stories. Some stories we might not be as familiar with, though. Last week we talked about Naaman. This week we're going to talk about a very interesting passage in Exodus chapter 18 about Jethro. Now, who is Jethro? Go ahead and give me some feedback. What do you remember about Jethro? Say it again. Moses' father-in-law, and he was a priest in the land of Midian, okay? And he gives his daughter to Moses. Of course, then we have the Exodus that takes place. And as we come into Exodus chapter 18, we're going to have this reuniting of Jethro and Moses, and also of Moses' wife and his two sons, his wife Zipporah, and then his two sons, Gershom and Eliezer. And as this scene comes around, we're going to go ahead and very briefly skip through verses 1 through 9. But they're reunited, and Moses begins to relay everything that God had done for him and for the Israelites as he's taken them out of bondage from Egypt and is bringing them through the wilderness and everything that's taken place so far. It's kind of like when you have a family reunion and you get together and you start catching up on all the big things that have happened as of late, and they want to hear the story themselves. That's the picture that we have here. And this is what is most amazing, is if you direct your attention to verse 9, it says, Jethro rejoiced for all the good that the Lord had done to Israel, and that he had delivered them out of the hand of the Egyptians. And Jethro said, Blessed be the Lord, who has delivered you out of the hand of the Egyptians and out of the hand of Pharaoh, and has delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all gods, because in this affair they dealt arrogantly with the people. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, brought a burnt offering and offered sacrifices to God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. Here we have almost a story of a conversion of sorts, where his father-in-law, who is this kind of unknown priest in the land of Midian, hears everything God has done for Israel, and then therefore says, I know now that God is the greatest God. He is greater than all other gods because no other God can do such a thing. And he brings sacrifices and offerings, and what a family reunion that this is. Jethro is worshiping the Lord. Moses is brought back with his wife and his children, and everyone's eating together. It's a beautiful picture, isn't it? However, just like in real life, people visit for a while, and then it's time to get back to work. And we're given this picture of Moses that is just astronomical when you start to understand what's going on. And if you look in verse 13, it says, The next day, Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from morning till evening. Right, this is the picture every day, and let's just remind ourselves, do you remember how many men, just men, were part of the Exodus? If you look back, it was just over 600,000 men. Now you add women and children, how big are the people of Israel at this point? I mean, they're well over a million. You're probably looking at close to 2 million people. And this is Moses' daily routine. He gets up and he stands before the people, and over a million people come to him day in and day out and bring to him their disputes and their problems, and Moses is supposed to figure them all out and fix them. Now, how many of you want to volunteer for that job? Where your job is to solve 2 million people's problems. Constant. What do you think would quickly happen to your psyche, your character, your demeanor? I could not imagine this kind of weight that is put on Moses, all right? And verse 14, like a good father-in-law should, it says, Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, and he said, what is this that you're doing for the people? Why do you sit alone, and all the people stand around you from morning till evening? And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. Now, that's a great answer, because Moses is this go-between, really, between the Lord and the children of Israel. And they know that the Lord has appointed Moses as leader over them. So naturally, if you want to inquire of the will of the Lord, who are you going to want to go talk to? You're going to want to go talk to Moses himself. Because Moses is the one who could inquire of God and has this wisdom and could settle whatever issue it is you have. And Moses goes on to say, the people come to me to inquire of God. And when they have a dispute, they come to me and I decide between one person and another. And I make them known the statutes of God and his laws. This is the picture. Moses is acting as really a judge. This is his job every day. But do you guys ever watch those judge shows? I get a crack out of watching some of them. Like, I saw a meme recently that said, how many of you would like to see Judge Judy monitor one of the presidential debates? And I said, hey, that'd be pretty great. But, you know, those are kind of funny. But when you actually look at, you know, someone who deals with this on a daily basis, what kind of things are brought before judges sometimes? I mean, you get some really serious things, some really serious issues that would weigh on your heart as you're trying to make judgments. And then you get some of the most ridiculous issues, right? And it would be like when, you know, the man comes to Jesus and says, you tell my brother to give me my share of the inheritance. And then Jesus, what was Jesus' response to him? Who made me a judge over you? I'm not going to get involved in this issue. You settle it yourself. But Moses is having to settle all these issues all by himself. And so in verse 17, Jethro says to him, what you're doing is not good. You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. And now Jethro, after making this statement that we're going to draw some application on, we're going to finish the story and then we're going to make some application to ourselves. But Jethro establishes to Moses, you are doing far more than you should be doing. Your burden is way too great and you cannot do it by yourself. You can't do it alone. And if you try to do it alone, the job is not going to get done the way it should get done, because you're going to burn out and the people are going to burn out and there's going to be some problems that come from that. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. But Jethro has a solution. He says, now obey my voice and I will give you advice, and God will be with you. I love that. Moses is sitting here as judge over 2 million people, and Jethro says, he pulls the father-in-law card. He says, everyone's going to you, but you know what? You need to listen to me. I'm going to tell you what you need to do if you actually want to inquire of God and honor the Lord. And he says, you shall represent the people before God and bring their cases to God. And you shall warn them about the statutes and the laws and make known the way of which they must walk and what they must do. Moreover, and here comes the application part for Jethro to Moses, he says, look for able men from whom all the people, men who fear God, are trustworthy and hate a bribe, and place such men over the people as chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens, and let them judge the people at all times. Every great matter they shall bring to you, but any small matter they shall decide themselves. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this, God will direct you, and you will be able to endure, and all this people also will go to their place in peace. So Moses listened to the voice of his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all of Israel and made them heads over the people, chiefs of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all times. Any hard case they brought to Moses, but any small matter they decided themselves. Then Moses let his father-in-law depart, and he went away to his own country. When you look at the system that Jethro sets up here, it's actually very similar to the way that military systems are set up, ironically. It's also very similar to what you see set up in the times of the kings when David sets up his administration and reorganizes the priesthood. But what he basically says is you need to develop a system where, yes, you are the mediator between God and the children of Israel, and you will continue to teach them, but you can't be burdened with 2 million people's problems. You need to appoint able-bodied men and tear it off by the thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens, and in doing so, all the smaller issues will get resolved on their own, and all the greater things will kind of work their way up and finally until they get to you. We have a very similar judicial system, don't we? Where you can continue to appeal up in the court system until you finally get to the Supreme Court, right? And when you do the math, and I'm not good at it, okay, but if you have a chieftain over 1,000, then you would break that up into the hundreds, so that's 10 more. And then you have those broken up into 50, so that's 20 more. And then those broken up even into fives over 10. When you do the math, there is some 78,600 men that are appointed by Moses in different places and in different areas to then be judges over the people. Now that should put some more perspective on what Moses was trying to do by himself. He was trying to do the job that is really going to be shared by thousands of other men. I mean, thousands of other men. And he was trying to do it all by himself. Does that just blow your mind that that was even a system for a while, that they decided this is what we're going to do? So this is the end of our story, but there's a lot that we can talk about with this, and there's a lot that I do want us to talk about with this. And the first thing is just straight from the mouth of Jethro. When he says, what you are doing is not good, You and the people with you will certainly wear yourselves out, for the thing is too heavy for you. You are not able to do it alone. And I think the first thing that we recognize when we look at this story is that we should not take on more than we are capable of as Christians. Clinton and I spent a long time talking about this morning, that when you say yes to something, you also at the same time have to say no to something else. And too often people can be guilty of over-promising and under-delivering. We go for quantity, but in doing so, we lose quality. Now, there's that pride and that ego that fights that, though, because the expression is something like this. If you want something done right, do it yourself. And unfortunately, sometimes as Christians, that's how people operate. There's a class that needs done, or there's something that needs done, and so I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it. And we get to the point where people can take on so much that they get to a place where they can burn out, where they just get tired, where they don't even want to do what they're doing anymore. And when that takes place, when you're already doing more than you should, the job's really not getting done. Because let's just imagine this. What do you think? All right, illustration time. How many of you like going to the DMV? All right. Has anyone seen that recent movie, Zootopia, and the scene with where they go into the DMV? Super cute movie. Check it out. In this movie, everyone who works at the DMV is a sloth, okay? And it just pictures kind of how we feel about the DMV, okay? What do you think your wait time was to talk to Moses before this system was put into place? I mean, Moses is judging people from morning till evening, and there's got to be issues with 2 million people every single day by the thousands that are trying to come and speak to Moses. Do you think everyone got their issue resolved every day? The job wasn't getting done. Moses was getting burnt out. The people were getting burnt out. The people were probably getting frustrated. And we have got to remember that we can't do it by ourselves. In fact, the very first thing that God said was not good himself was after he made man, he said it's not good for man to be alone. Because God knew that we needed a helpmate as men. And it's not just with marriage, although that's a big one. And I just feel for people that are single parents and are trying to raise children and do that job by themselves because something is missing in God's design there. And people have done it, and they do it to the best of their ability with prayer and with help of others in the church that step in to try to supplement what is missing at home. But it's not ideal, is it? Trying to do that by yourself, I can only imagine, would be absolutely exhausting. Notice in the way that the leadership of the church is set up, there's not an elder, there's an eldership. There's always more than one. Why do you think that is? Can you imagine if one man had to deal with all of the issues that go on within the church and make all those judgments himself? That would be a burden too great for someone to bear. Or what about even when you look at the apostles? Jesus kind of modeled this behavior for us. When he sent them out, he didn't send them out by themselves, did he? He sent them out two by two, because they could help bear each other's burden. And when you look at, I want to tell you a brief story. I have a friend of mine, and it's really sad. They worship at a church here in Salem, some kind of a community church. And her father is the head pastor, and some things happened in his personal life, and he had to step down because of things that were exposed in his life and what was happening. Broke her heart, broke the congregation's heart. And I was talking to some of the members of that church that I know from Broadway Coffee House, and I make friends and acquaintances with people. And they were saying, it's just so sad that this happened. We're probably going to have to shut the doors in about 3 months. And I asked, why is that? And they said, well, our head pastor just, you know, had to step down. We don't have anyone else to do the work. And because of one man being removed from the equation, the church decided, church of about this size, that they're probably just going to have to shut their doors and no work can be done anymore. That's a terrible model. That's a church that hasn't been modeled the way that God has ordained it and designed it to be. Because when you put everything on one man, he's not going to be able to do the work all by himself. And if you take him out, what's going to happen to that work if everything's put on him and placed on him? That's what's wrong with the pastor model that you see a lot in the Christian church. It's not the way that God designed it, and they're fighting against what God has designed to be a blessing and to share the load with shepherds and with deacons and with evangelists and with teachers and with all these different things. Because when you look at Ephesians 4, the way that the church works and functions properly is when every part is doing its part, what every joint supplies, every single member. No one person can do it alone. Think of the church as like a big group project. We all hated group projects growing up in school because generally only one person tries to do the project and everyone else kind of doesn't do anything, right? I saw a funny quote. It said, when I die, I want everyone I did a group project with to be my pallbearer so they can let me down one more time. But, you know, the church is not supposed to be like that group project, where one person does all the work and everyone else just kind of stands by and watches. We can't do it alone. And we need each other. The second lesson from this, and that's tailored to that point, is that we have to be willing to share the load. Because that's an entirely different point that's going to be more introspective in looking at our hearts. Because think about Moses in his response to Jethro for a moment, and how Moses could have responded to Jethro. Moses has been appointed by God to be the leader of almost 2 million people, over 1.5 million at least, right? And Moses is the one who had led the people out of the land of Egypt. You can picture Moses perhaps maybe doing a little bit of this if he wasn't careful, right? And yet, Jethro comes up to him and says, hey, you who's judging all these people, guess what you need to do? You need to listen to my judgment. You need to humble yourself and listen to me because what you're doing isn't right. And what you need to do, Moses, is you need to find able men, that's really important, but you need to find able men who are trustworthy and fear God and don't take a bribe, and you need to set them up as judges as well. Now, how could Moses have responded poorly? How could he have responded? Who do you think you are? Just now you start worshiping the Lord, and now you think you have the right to tell me, Moses, what I'm supposed to do, how to do my job? You see, Moses could have responded really poorly. And sometimes we inadvertently almost respond that way because we don't trust anyone else to do the job that we're doing. We want to do it ourselves because, after all, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. But we need help, and we can't do it by ourselves, whatever job that is. We need each other. We need to work together. And when you look at the scriptures, when you look at what Paul tells Timothy, he says, what you had heard and seen in me, entrust to other faithful men who are then able to teach others also. See, Paul gave Timothy the same advice Jethro gave Moses. He says, Timothy, you can't do this work by yourselves. You need to share the load. And you need to find others who are able and capable of doing so and share it with them. Now that point's important in and of itself because Jethro is not telling Moses to be irresponsible. He doesn't say take every 9-year-old and appoint them as judge over the city. Okay? No, that's not going to work, right? He doesn't say take the men that are the drunks and appoint them as judges. That's not how that works. He says you find those who are trustworthy men. Those who you know are going to get the job done. And I imagine with how many people were appointed that the Lord helped direct Moses in knowing who to appoint. Because I can't imagine Moses going, you know what, I know 78,600 people off the top of my head. That would be great for this position. I imagine the Lord helped him with this. I imagine there was a process through this. But Moses himself, the leader of all these people, humbles himself and says, you know what, you're right, I do need help. And we've got to be willing to accept that reality ourselves, and we've got to be able to make sure that we seek out the right help to accomplish the job. The final point tonight, and then the lesson's yours, and this is more just personal to this congregation at South Salem, and that is that especially to help our eldership here and to honor our elders, we need to delegate a lot of, and I'm asking the elders to help themselves delegate a lot of responsibility to different people in this congregation. You know, it's really interesting. Sometimes you'll go on different churches' websites and they'll have like a staff section. And they'll have like all these different things that are listed there. And you'll have like, you know, director of this and senior director of this and all these different things. And at first I look at that and I go, well, that's not biblical. You know, you're supposed to have elders and deacons and evangelists, and those are the only, you know, offices of the church. You know, when you think about it, though, that model, when done right, is actually a very biblical principle in delegating different jobs to different people. We just don't happen to give people a title and put them on our website, but we do that all the time here. For example, the elders know that they need help with organizing and structuring Vacation Bible School. Now, as soon as I said that, who's the first person that popped in all of your minds? Jerry Jones. Now, we don't have director of VBS under staff on our webpage, but the elders need help with that, and so what do? They delegate that and say, could you help us to oversee this section? You know, we need someone to help with the grounds, to cut the grass and to blow all the weeds away. Who's the first person that comes to your mind? Bruce Carroll. Now, we don't have director of leaf blowing up on our website. But you know what? What he does is so important. And that's just one of those things that it's not a matter that the elders need to take care of. So that can be delegated to someone else. Can you imagine if the elders were responsible and in charge of dealing with every single minute issue in the church? A light bulb needs fixed. Nope, nope, we can't do that. We have to have John Hafer come down and get on a ladder and fix it, you know? But it's not just with minute things like that, but there's other issues that can be delegated that we talk about. That's why we talked about mentoring. And when you look in the scriptures, it's not just the shepherds that are to be teaching and directing the group, but the younger men are supposed to learn from who? The older men. Many times there are issues in young people's lives that they very well should and could, and it's a good thing to go to the elders and to get their advice and to get their wisdom and their guidance. That's a good thing for young people to do. But oftentimes some of the issues are not something that they necessarily need to sit down with the elders with. Maybe it's something they need to go out and talk to Roy about or go talk to Wayne about and say, you know, Wayne, did you ever experience this when you were younger? How did you handle it? And see, when we do that and we start working all together and doing our different parts, you imagine how much stress that takes off the eldership? In Acts 6, now remember, let's go back. Acts 6 is about the seven. Oh, you guys are good. You remember even from almost a year ago. Acts 6 is about the seven. Because there were the Hellenistic widows that weren't being seen to, weren't being given their bread, and the apostles are approached and says, you need to do something about it. And what was their response? This needs done, but this is not our responsibility. We can't be burdened with serving tables. We need to preach the gospel. And he said, they said, you then select seven men, right, who are full of the Spirit, who can be overseers of this task. And they did. And then they were the ones that were responsible, and that relieved the apostles from having to deal with that particular issue. And so the plea to South Salem is, I want us all, in different ways, with what God has given you, look for opportunities that you can help the leadership here at this church. Look for opportunities where you can step up and you can take that burden in some ways off the elders if it's not something that needs brought to them. Now, granted, there are things that absolutely should go to the elders and that have to be decided by them, just like there were things that ended up with Moses still and that he had to decide, and Moses was still the one to teach and direct the people. But with the smaller things, we've got to help each other out. We've got to be a family and work together. And there are many things that can simply be delegated that we can help out with. Not much of a lesson that ends with an invitation, but that really is our lesson tonight. It's just another look into one of those older stories that we don't spend a lot of time on, to pull out some application for ourselves and to learn how we can help each other as a church, because we can't do it alone. We weren't ever built to do it alone. We weren't ever designed or purposed to do it alone. We need each other, and that's why Christ created the church. And so that does spill into an invitation, because I don't know the situation of all our visitors that are here tonight, but if you've been trying to go it alone in your life, you know what I'm talking about when I say you've realized that that's not working and you're having a hard time. Jesus Christ not only gives himself to you, but this family here is the body of Christ, and we are a family. And if you decide to give your life to Christ and you become a part of this family, rest assured, even before you make that decision, if we know that you need help, we're going to do our very best to be family to you and help you. But let me encourage you, obey the gospel. Stop trying to do it alone. Jesus says, my burden is easy and my yoke is light. If you come to him, repent of your sins, and you're buried with him in baptism, you'll be given the forgiveness of your sins. You'll be added to this body, his body, the body of Christ. And you will never, ever, ever have to be alone again. Never. Now, that being said, even sometimes as Christians, we go back to that, don't we? We don't rely upon our family the way that we should. We don't confess to one another. We don't open up to one another. We try to do the lone wolf thing and do it by ourselves. And if that describes your situation, you've noticed that that's not working so well for you either. Take the time tonight to sit down with a brother or a sister and ask them to walk with you. Ask them to help you, because we can't do it alone. This invitation is for anyone that has need. Let's stand and sing the song of encouragement.